All right, so here's how this is. Full disclosure, I will not lie to you. I really don't like this story. I have a visceral reaction to this story being within the pages of a book that also provides me with words of comfort and that teaches me about the greatest love. At face value, this is a story of a heartless God who just wants to test the limits of his follower. And even worse for me this morning in Baden, I had to preach this story on the same day as I did a baptism, and it just feels wrong. So, before I say anything else, I want you to know that if this story offends your ears, if it made you cringe, if it made you wonder what kind of God we worship, well then know that you're not alone. So now that I've put that out there, I will also say there is more to this story than what we get at face value. Even if I would prefer if it just wasn't there and we didn't have to do the work to find it. I was somewhat comforted this week in the online forums of which I take part, preachers like me trying to figure out what to say about a story like this. Many of us were struggling, but it did seem that the collective struggle produced some really interesting thoughts and research. Historically, some have said that this is a story of great faith. I will give you that the great story, the whole story of Abraham's life, is a story of great faith. Time and again, God challenges the faith of Abraham in tests that I know that I would not pass. Tests like, pack up everything, Abram, and go to a place that I haven't shown you yet and that you've never seen before. And Abraham packs up everything he owns and off he goes. God says, look at all the stars. I will make your descendants as numerous as all of them. And Abraham, childless, says, oh, well, that's cool. Years go by. Abraham, well into his 90s, God shows up and says, hey, you know, as a sign of our covenant together, I need you and all the male members of your household to just trim off a little extra skin. And Abraham says, cool, I've got a knife right here. Where is this skin that you want me to remove? And now, in today's story, we're told that after such a long time of promise after promise, Isaac is finally born. And God has finally started off this numerous as the stars thing with this long-awaited and promised child. Which is why it's so surprising that in this second half of today's story, we hear God again. Oh, Abraham, just one more thing. If this is a story of faithfulness, I am forced to wonder just what the point of it is for us. Is it meant to make us aware of just how little faith we really have? Is it meant to make us feel bad about ourselves for not having the faith of Abraham? I have a hard time thinking that's the point. I mean, if we seriously consider that for a moment, if this story was suddenly able to convince us to be as faithful as Abraham, then we would have to be able to imagine bringing our own children to the altar. And they're not for communion. And if that was an expectation of God, even only as a test for us, then I will be the first one to say, count me out. I don't think that is a God that any one of us wants to worship. Now, there was one thing that I read this week that kind of stuck with me. Well, several, in fact, but this is one. Even if the whole thing is abhorrent to me, there was one thing that I found interesting. Abraham somehow believes, if you choose to believe that he was really ready to go along with it all, that God is capable of still making his promise happen if Isaac is dead. After years and years of promises and Abraham doing what he's asked, he has this boy who seems to be the key to it all. Because if Abraham is going to have descendants that are as numerous as the stars in the heavens, well, then he kind of needs some offspring. So enter Isaac. And Isaac is the first visible and tangible sign that God gives Abraham that God's promises are going to come true. And then God says, actually, can you just take him up a mountain and, how is it possible for Abraham to believe that somehow everything will be okay on the other end of this request? But it would appear that Abraham is willing to let go of the only physical, tangible thing that he has to prove that God's promises are true. Which leads me to think about the things that we hold on to. I'm not talking about our kids. For heaven's sakes, hold on to your kids. But what about the other things that are evidence of our blessings? Do we hold on to our houses and our cars and our possessions to help us feel comfortable? Do we mistakenly believe that these possessions are evidence that we are blessed by God? Because surely you don't believe that those who don't have these things are less blessed or less loved by God. Now, the truth is that child sacrifice was a very normal thing in Abraham's world. So even though we have every reason to believe that it hurt his heart as much as it hurts ours, it wouldn't have sounded as foreign to his ears. So I wonder, maybe that's why he does it. Goes through the motions. Maybe he thinks it's just the natural next request from a God. And even though I do not have a good answer, really an answer at all, as to why this lesson required all those first steps, I do know that when Isaac was all tied up and Abraham had his arm lifted, that our God said no. That our God says life, not death. And that our God has kept saying that always since. That even when death did happen, that our God said that life would win. So then, I'm curious, what is your sign of that truth? That truth that God's love is bigger and stronger than death, that life wins, that love wins. What is your sign? Is it your baptism? Is it communion? Is it your church? Would you be willing to let go of that? Believing that God is still big enough to make that truth true? This story might offend me on many fronts, but it also has the power to make me wonder about the size of Abraham's God. Abraham really does seem to believe, really, that God can overcome any obstacle, that God can make good come out of the worst circumstance. Which leaves me with just one question for you. How big is your God?